Welcome to The Public Storyteller. My name is Michael Stock. I do a weekly radio show called Folk and Acoustic Music on WLRN in Miami. And with Dr. Karen Neal, performance storyteller and author, we bring you The Public Storyteller, stories of everyday people who live in South Florida. Karen, what story do we have today?
This is a story from Russell Shepherd of Miami.
It was late in 1978. I was a young man in the Coast Guard. I was on a Coast Guard ship in the Windward Passage. Now, I was stationed in Miami, and my ship was out of Miami, Florida. I was transferred from New Jersey, and it was very beautiful down here. And things were going well with my career. For the most part, I was an average sailor, except for the fact that I had made E6 in 2 years and 10 months. And at the time, I had 4 years in the service, and I was looking forward in the next year to possibly being considered to be a chief, which is an E7. Things were going quite well in the Coast Guard. But on this particular patrol in the Windward Passage where we did drug interdiction, there was a lot of drug boats that would come up between Cuba and Haiti. And we would basically stop them and do whatever arrests or whatever we needed to do. But this one particular day, it was quite stormy. Seas were high. And, the skies were just so gray that day. And so were the seas. And the seas were generally blue and beautiful. And it was my job on that particular day to make sure in foul weather, that I closed all the hatches. It was called setting zebra. And no one was allowed out on the weather decks. So as I was shutting the hatch on the port side, which is the left side of the vessel, forward, I noticed that approximately 100 feet from us came this Haitian wooden vessel that was floundering. And this particular vessel, the water was high. When there were waves, it would slosh on the deck. And when it would tilt a certain way, water would wash on the deck. And I don't know, maybe there was 30, 50 people on board. I really don't know the number. And you could see that these people were quite panicked, and they were scared to death. And you could see that things were not going well on that old wooden boat. So, lo and behold, this Haitian woman locks eyes with me, and she is holding out her baby to me, and she is pleading. She's not tucking the baby under her arm and crying out to rescue. She is holding this child, this infant, out to me, pleading with me to, you could tell, of course, that she wanted us to rescue the baby. Not necessarily her, the baby. And so, in the meet, you could see her brown eyes, and you could see the water coming out of her eyes, and I was the only one out there at the time. So, she was directing this right at me. The executive officer of the vessel comes out, and he's looking over at the vessel. I mentioned to him, I said, we've got to save this vessel. I mean, that's what we did. We're the United States Coast Guard. He told me, well, and it's not U.S. policy. Well, I was kind of, I was shocked by this. But I'm a soldier, and I obey orders, and he was an officer, and I didn't do anything. Now, in the back of my mind, I had this buck knife folding in my pocket, and I actually thought that I should get it out, hold it to his throat, and order that he drop the lifeboat and go over there and save some of these folks, including this baby and this mother. But I did nothing, and he went inside, and I saw the boat kind of float away as we went forward, and the lady holding out her baby crying. And that's the last I saw of her. And about 15 minutes later, a half hour, I went out again to see if I could see the vessel. Well, I couldn't see the vessel, which really doesn't mean it sank right there, but it was out of my particular view. And it was a very eerie feeling, very sickening, eerie feeling. Well, you know, I mean, after that, my whole view changed towards my service in the military. It was a little bit hard to swallow. I really felt guilty that I had done nothing. I did nothing to save this baby. This was my chance in life to define how you were going to proceed. Now, the problem is that if I would have done something drastic like pull the knife on the executive officer of the vessel, I would end up in jail for the rest of my life or dead. But the thing is, maybe that baby would be alive. And it also struck me that, you know, the Nazis during World War II, those guards did nothing either. And they chose to live in relative comfort, as I did. So I went on with life, but my service to the Coast Guard after that was short-lived. I believe I had had enough. Within a year that I was out of the military, the relationships that I had were deteriorated. Basically, I floundered as a civilian for a while, for a couple of years. But I think at one point, I decided, well, even those with less virtue, they have to have a life as well, and you've got to get on your feet, and you've got to move forward. And I stayed in Miami during this period, and I've always lived in Dade County. So I was going to school nights, and I was able to get a bachelor's degree. And I started a small business, and I got married, and everything seemed to be going well. Everything went well. Well, we had our first child, and, you know, of course, it's a very special thing, as parents know, especially the first is just, you know, the overwhelming amount of love and care and that goes behind, you know, being a parent is just awesome. Well, shortly after I became a parent, I had the first dream. And the first dream was, I mean, it probably was like, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 weeks after we had the baby, that I saw that mother and the baby in the water and they were drowning in this blue, clear water. And I saw the last bubbles leaving their body. Needless to say, it was very disconcerting. So, you know, it was on my mind because of this child or this mother really never had a chance. So after that, there was one other dream. Several months later, I was in heaven and that I was washing this mother's feet while she was holding her baby. And I was asking her forgiveness. And there was a feeling of peace and love. Since then, I've had no dreams with regard to this. Well, time has passed. I went to law school after that. I have dedicated my practice to representing poor indigent minorities. But, of course, that does not forgive the wrong that was done to that infant years ago, and nothing really can. I just wanted them to know that I think about them.
Russell Shepherd of Miami. With really an incredible story, Karen. It's courage coming out with it, but also I kind of understand now why soldiers and people in the military want to keep that part of their lives secret.
And it's interesting that you say that, Michael, because Mr. Shepherd told me that he had never told this story before, and this is something that happened more than 30 years ago. So, you can imagine the kinds of things that people go through that they hold inside them. They change their lives, and yet they don't want to talk about them.
I still have chills. Do you come across many stories like that?
Well, the subject matter, of course, is different than most stories that I've heard. I don't hear all that many life and death stories and ethical dilemma stories like that. But in a more general sense, this story demonstrates something that is common to all good stories. Transformation is a hugely important aspect of a story. How has the protagonist, the main character, in this case Russell, grown and changed over the course of the story? And how, by extension, do we grow and change? And this is just an extreme example of somebody who was changed remarkably from a single event.
Incredibly brave to come forward and share that story with us.
Yeah, and as I was listening, I felt that this really was a movie script. I always tell people when I record stories that it doesn't have to be something that is suitable to be made into a major motion picture, and people always laugh. But this actually could be made into a major motion picture because it has all the elements. And because Mr. Shepherd told it in such a cinematic way, we were there and we got so much emotion and so much meaning out of the story, and we saw the span of time. So he started out, as many good movies do, with one very concrete scene. We see minute to minute what he sees, and then he summarizes, goes through the years very quickly, stops when he has a dream, then keeps going, stops when he has another dream. So we see the ramifications of that one concrete incident through summary, and that's very effective. It's a very effective way to tell a story, either in a movie or through oral storytelling.
As much guilt as Mr. Shepherd felt, you realize the captain was the man who made the decision.
It's a very good point that you make, because people go through life experiencing similar things often, but it takes somebody who's quite sensitive and somebody who's quite thoughtful and somebody who takes the time to process something to be able to get meaning out of an event. I mean, stories are about meaning. We all live our lives, but not everybody stops to say, what is this about? What happened here? And Mr. Shepherd did, and for that, I salute him.
And it took him decades for him to share that story.
That's right. We hope that it won't take decades for our listeners to share their stories, though, do we?
Well, thank you for that story, Karen. Dr. Karen Neal is a performance storyteller and author. My name is Michael Stock. Thank you for tuning in to this WLRN podcast.